Dancers have a lot to balance. From their pirouettes to their jumps, a dancer's performance is a direct result of hard work and motivation. So where does food fit into this? There's a lot of myths and a ton of antiquated ideals about what a dancer's diet should look like. And I'm here to dispel those. I'm Rachel Fine, registered dietitian nutritionist and founder of To The Point Nutrition. I'm the dance nutritionist, and I'm here to tell you that to be a successful dancer, you don't have to diet. Instead, I'll teach you how to use food as your best tool to enhance your performance. A nourishing meal plan not only fuels your dancing, but also enhances your strength, improves your balance, supports your flexibility, and most importantly, reduces your risk to injury.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm so happy to be chatting. I love, love, love your work. I've been following you for quite some time, and really you are an inspiration. So I just want to dive in and start this conversation and hear what you
Thank
have
you,
to say.
Rachel, I love the work you're doing too. I love your flavor of using humor and just like very, very accessible, fun information that's very applicable. So thank you too.
Of course, I feel like nutrition specifically gets to be a very confusing topic, and there's so much complexity to it, and unfortunately, little squares on Instagram just don't do it enough justice. So to share messages in their most simplest form is a bit of a necessity, right? That's the goal. So Melanie, why don't you give us an introduction about who you are, maybe some highlights as well.
I'm originally from Santa Cruz, California. It's where my family still lives, a beautiful part of the country. I trained ballet there from really young. And then I came to Houston to join the company here at Houston Ballet. And I've been here for 22 seasons. And have a son who is now in college. So I have a native Houstonian son. I've had a really fulfilling career here in the company, getting to dance so many dream roles and work with so many wonderful choreographers and coaches. And we have access to just a lot of talent in this field. And so it's been quite a journey in this ballet world. I guess I will say something that I don't always get to speak to in my highlights or introductions is that for me, I've always been an expressive physical person, a dancer, if you will, but I don't consider that just one form. I'm a mover. And I am the first person in my family who's a dancer. So I don't come from this like long held lineage of ballet. My dad is an immigrant. He's from Italy, and he came here when he was 15, and both sides of my family are musicians. And so I think that I hold a pretty like outsider perspective on a lot of ballet culture things that we just can easily digest. And that has given me like a nice balance, to be honest, because I've from the beginning, I've had a whole family behind me going, huh, what? that is an Italian family, and specifically around nutrition, since we're talking about that, they have been like, eat more, here's pasta, here's like literally, like they're like, what are you doing? You're too small, you know? So I've had this juxtaposition my entire life of like ballet world and then my outside life. And I'm really grateful for that. So I think that's where as much as I'll say.
I love that. And actually, I cannot explain to you how much of that feels relatable for me, because I too am the only dancer coming out of my family, with the exception of my mom, who developed a liking towards dance later in her life. So she's always been like a adult fun. I'm going to go take some open classes here and there. But I come from a pretty large Jewish family, and it's similar in the sense of when I experienced my own instances of struggling with nutrition and eating and food, I always had this whole other part of me, right? That was like, huh? What are you doing? It's the holiday. Why aren't you eating this? You need to eat more. So I agree with you in the sense of, I think that played a huge role for my own self-identification when it came to something is not right now. Like, this is not what I think is supposed to be helping my dancing, right? At the time, I thought that in order to be the best dancer, I had to stick to a clean, like, restricted, perfect little diet, which ended up burning me out. I luckily had that perspective, which is exactly what you're explaining, to say, no, this isn't right. Like, if you're, what you're following, if you can't enjoy these other experiences of life, going out with your family, having these big, you know, holiday dinners and family dinners, then something is not adding up and something needs to change. So that's a perspective that I definitely can relate to you with. And it really kind of brings us into this conversation of balance, because one thing I want to talk with you about is throughout your years of dance and also motherhood, how has that shifted for you? How has your relationship with dance shifted just over the, I would say, like, the later professional years?
So definitely for me, a theme that has immediately been a shift from becoming a mother, almost from like first months of becoming pregnant, was a change in a relationship to my body. You know, I think that I always had an understanding of these expectations and ideals, and I could just visually see what was going on. And the videos that I watched of, you know, ballerinas, I watched Kelsey Kirkland. I watched the video 1,000 times that she ended up saying, disclaimer, I was very unhealthy, don't take this as an example. And yet we were all taking it as an example secretly because we were absorbing that, or I was. And so when I was pregnant with my son and my body had already gone through some pretty significant shifts, like as I had started my cycles and, you know, all of the things of becoming a woman from a girl. But then of course, another big shift happened being pregnant. And the memory that I always hold, that I don't even know if I've ever actually shared this out loud, but I actually remember doing this thing where I would take class and look in the mirror, and it makes me kind of sad now after the work that I've done. I didn't want to see myself. I didn't want to see my body. Like, I had this weird shift going on, like, what's it called? A conflict inside of me going on, of feeling like I loved being pregnant with my son. I had a really good experience, and it was, I very much wanted to be a mother, even though I was a very young mother. And just feeling what was going on in my body was incredible. It was amazing. And I was like, oh my gosh, what is happening? I'm growing a baby right now. And so I loved all the changes. But then when I would go into class and see the mirror and see the other bodies around me, I had all this conditioning, and I literally didn't know what to do with it. Let's just say that. And it was really striking to me. And it took me a long time to start, like, looking in the mirror again. I did this thing where I'd kind of blur my eyes out and just try to dance and not see what was going on. Sorry, that was kind of a long way to try to set the stage for the fact that after that, I felt like once I started looking in the mirror again, I started looking in a different way. And I started kind of being embodied in a different way and really just beginning to go through this journey of, like, being in my body as a woman and as a mother, and trying to start to unpack all these expectations that now came at me much louder than they ever had before. It was wild. And so it's been quite a journey, and I'm happy to say that I've come out much more appreciative of who I am as a body and all of that, what that encompasses, and what food is for me and what dance is for me and movement. And it's taken a long time to, like, find a more sweet spot in that.
Absolutely. So many really important keywords that you mentioned that I want to unpack for a bit. The first is this idea of us as dancers being conditioned into believing that we need to strive for these unfortunate, most often unattainable, and very unrealistic ideals, whether it is around our habits at mealtimes, whether it's around how our bodies look, right? And having this like one thing, these being conditioned, these thoughts, these external, both external, maybe sometimes internal messages that are coming at us, at times louder than at other times. And then we've got this more internalized, intuitive feeling of like for you when you were pregnant, just enjoying that experience, right? And having to really sift through all of those external messages. And that's what gets so challenging for dancers, especially our youngest dancers who don't necessarily yet have the knowledge to maybe know that those messages are unhelpful, right? I think for you, from what it sounds, you have to do a lot of work in reminding yourself that, okay, this is unhelpful, this is unsupportive, identifying those messages, right? And can you talk a little bit more about how that journey went in regards to maybe learning about or experiencing these messages aren't supporting me, these are unhelpful?
Yeah, one thing that just popped into my head, the tail end of what you were saying is, well, two things. One is that when we're young and we're in anything, you know, we're in like our families that we come up in, we're in the ballet studio with teachers, we're so impressionable. We're like so moldable. And so of course that conditioning is really strong. And so I think we take things as truth, right? So it's like you have someone telling you, or visually you're just seeing imagery that says, this is what a ballerina looks like, and everyone looks the same. And we can talk about this in so many different ways, right? Diversity of many, many facets of being a human body in dance. But the thing that really cued me in to start going, this doesn't work for me, was a loss of confidence, a loss of freedom and joy in the movement. I truly was, like I said, I always was a mover and I loved dance and I was pretty ferocious in the way that I would throw myself and feel free in just about everything, even though I also relished the like precision and like all that hard work of like building classical ballet technique. There's that aspect too. But I really started to see that side of my freedom of movement and attack really start getting smaller and leaving. And that was really scary because it felt like I was really losing myself as a dancer. So that cued me in that like something was wrong and I didn't understand why I didn't know how to dance anymore. That sounds extreme, but it kind of felt like that. And I was really in my head and really worried about what people were thinking a lot. And people were thinking things a lot as my body was shifting and changing. And so I, you know, to be really honest, I had to get outside help and opinions, and I had to get feedback outside of the ballet studio to start balancing again, like, wait a second. These truths that I've digested for so long and at such a young, impressionable age, and now I'm an adult in the studio, like, are they really true? So I guess maybe, you know, when you're younger, what I always wonder is how do we give these younger dancers the ability to critically think sooner? How can they hear this side of the story sooner? And when I'm in a room teaching or coaching or choreographing, I'm very intentional to try to provide that, but I can't be in the studio with every single dancer. And so I think that part of it is inviting young dancers into really thinking and asking questions and getting curious about what feels good to them and what doesn't, and being able to ask questions, I think is a really big piece that could lead to I'm not just going to digest everything that you're telling me as the, you know, the only way. I hope that made sense.
Part of the work, if not all of the work I do as a dietitian for dancers, and within my program, I have a program called The Healthy Dancer, and it's all about redefining what we mean to be the healthy dancer. And I'm going to talk a little bit more with you about that soon. But what I want to say is one of the biggest realms of this and of the work I do is self-discovery. It's not, some dancers will contact me and say, okay, well, I'm looking for a meal plan. I want to know exactly what to eat, X, Y, Z. And I'm like, actually, we're going to work together and we're going to start to build a body of evidence so that you can start to critically think and understand what foods, what movement patterns are feeling good for you, not just from a physical perspective, but also from a mental and emotional perspective as well. And that idea of exactly what you're saying, inviting younger dancers to start thinking, right? To start exploring compassionately, that's another big one. Because we want them to be able to identify, for example, just as one example, signs of burnout. Signs of burnout can often be one of the first ways that we can identify an inadequate meal plan, right? Just not eating enough throughout our day. I think a lot of dancers don't realize they come up towards like nutcracker season or even towards the end of summer intensive season and they're like drained, right? And they feel maybe even a sense of burnout coming on, not realizing that their nutritional intake, they might not have been eating enough to support increased more rehearsals in their day, more performance schedules in their day. So really understanding potential signs, and burnout is just the first one that comes to me, is an important tool for even some of our youngest dancers to take with them and start identifying, hey, oh, and another thing you said, getting those outside resources, right? Mental health professionals, dietitians, speaking with and accessing support is so incredibly encouraged for dancers.
Sure. And I know that immediately makes me think about access, you know, and thank goodness we have these platforms now. Most people, whether they have access to outside support or not, can at least get on and find videos like yours and things like that. And so I think maybe the more that dancers that hold, you know, like if we're principal dancers, we have a responsibility to be speaking and sharing what we have learned with younger generations and pointing them in the direction of like you, you know, for example, or like, or our other resources, because not everyone, just to be honest, not everyone can afford therapy. Not everyone, especially if you're a young dancer, not everyone has parents who perhaps have the resources themselves or are able to kind of orchestrate that. And so it's a vulnerable population. So this is a way, you know, online, you can find a lot of education and a lot of resource as well. So I think it's our job as dancers that are more experienced in the field to really be helping people to know that there are people who can help on here too.
Absolutely. Accessibility is always something that I truly have valued, especially from the nutrition perspective, because so much of nutrition and food, and unfortunately so much of what society kind of defines as being, and I quote, healthy, is not accessible to most of the world, right? So providing these conversations, providing my blog, dancenutrition.com, was always an outlet for me to help with increase in accessibility on these topics. And I do want to ask you, because I think it's a big question, and before we sign off, I definitely want to get your insights on it, but I would love to hear from you in regard to how you would redefine what it means to be the healthy dancer, because so often dancers hear healthy dancer and they immediately think more work in the studio, more, and I quote, healthy food choices, but that's not necessarily everything. And from what we gathered in this conversation, it sounds like you have built so much experience in your life that feeds into how you would redefine this. So I'd love to hear from you.
I would define a healthy dancer as someone who honors themselves. And I think that there has to truly be spoken about a balance between self-respect and compassion for self as like the first stop in this field. And then of course, integrating and digesting the outside feedback that is coming in. But I think that we have to truly cultivate, and this is in all areas, right? So this is what we eat. This is how we rest. This is how hard we push ourselves and when to say no, and when to say this is hurting me, or this feels uncomfortable to me, or there has to be a very strong sense of, what am I trying to say, loyalty to who we are first. And I think that it's pretty opposite in a lot of dance training. You know, it's like the trust gets flipped. So what I think of as a healthy dancer now for myself, I try to endeavor to cultivate practices within myself that build trust and good relationship with my instincts, my intuition, what feels good to me in my life. And then I take that into the studio, into the ballets that I'm dancing, into the work relationships that I have. But if I don't have a genuine, healthy relationship with myself, I can't have a healthy relationship with ballet and with dance. And so just cultivating that like self-love and knowing, like really honoring who you are. I know that can sound so broad, but I really do believe that if that's like first and foremost, all of this stuff becomes clearer.
Absolutely. Building self-trust, utilizing discovery, as I mentioned earlier. One word I always like to provide also is the word of nourishment. Oftentimes we think of nourishment, again, as only looking at our food choices, but dancers should understand that nourishing our bodies really means, just as you mentioned, looking at this from so many different perspectives. Are we providing ourselves with enough time to rest and recover? Are we thinking of fueling our body consistently and regularly throughout the day? Because for so many dancers, long rehearsals, long performances, it can be easy to even let snack habits and mealtime habits fall to the waistline, not get enough in, and then experience a lot of appetite dysregulation. So it all really comes to play. Also just experiencing, obviously I experience this myself as well, but motherhood helps us in experiencing so much more in our life that's just outside the studio that we can ultimately bring back into the studio.
Ballet in particular as a dance form really leans towards perfectionism and like a rigidity in like, this is the way, this is the way you've got to look, this is the way you've got to dance, this is the way you've got to show up. This is, you know, it's very extreme. And I think that, like you mentioned, this kind of shift into motherhood like really shows you that stuff's not perfect. But if dancers can rework a little bit from the beginning, just noticing who they are as a dancer, and when it digresses from that perfect, you know, train, and that can lead to shame or self-criticism, instead of that, I think that there needs to be curiosity and compassion around like, oh, so I'm not like that mold, but that doesn't make you less of a good dancer or a good ballerina. It gives you your own identity, and that's beautiful. That's diversity, right? And so celebrating that and honoring that, instead of a dancer getting so down on themselves because they're not reaching this perfect mark, is another important part of this conversation. And I think really belongs. Making mistakes, great. It means that you're showing up and trying. So I think that that's just another piece that I would say is, yeah, get curious around that perfectionism and like when you don't make that mark, not failure.
Absolutely. Melody, you are a wealth of knowledge and insight, and such an inspiration really to all of us. So I just want to thank you so much again for joining me in this conversation. It's such a pleasure to connect with you, and I look forward to connecting more.